fantasy readers. This is Corinne Norton, your fellow book binger. And you are listening to the Finding Fantasy Reads podcast, where you can test out a new fantasy story every single week to find your next favorite author. This next story is going to split over 2 weeks, which I'm happy about because I think it needs time to really sink in. People of Water is such a unique story that drew me into the world Rachelle Nelson created, with characters living on the water and a girl who finally dreams of the land they'll find. Rachelle grew up reading fantasy novels and getting her clothes muddy in the pine forests of Idaho. These days, she still loves hiking through mountains and libraries, though she's a bit less fond of mud. She doesn't write true stories, but she does write stories about truth. Her debut novel, Sky of Seven Colors, released in 2023 through Enclave Publishing, and it's a YA fantasy about a colorless kingdom. Stick around to the end or check out today's show notes to see where you can find more from Rachelle. For now, please enjoy People of Water by Rachelle Nelson. Chapter 1. I could always tell which dreams were the important ones. When I woke up, they still felt real. Then, they became real. Father believed me first. Mother had finally decided I was old enough to accompany her onto the upper decks of the vessel. There, women gossiped and sewed, and everyone wore their hair in elaborate curls and braids, even little girls after a certain age, which meant a new routine for me in the morning before we left our family chamber. I had to look presentable for the day to come. I sat on the floor in front of Mother's chair. She pinned and pinched my long tresses into submission while Father prepared our meal. Usually, he insisted I keep things tidy, but today, with Mother fussing over me, he didn't complain when he stumbled over my little bed. I hadn't tucked it away for the morning yet, and our room was small, like all the quarters on the vessel. Just enough space for the chairs, the table, and the cooking utensils. Mother and Father had their own partitioned sleeping area.
"Your hair is your best feature,"
Mother spoke around the extra pins held in her mouth.
"Everyone will notice, so we can't rush the dressing. You need to sit still."
I didn't move, though I probably batted my lashes with a hint of vanity. Father always pointed out how my eyes matched my hair exactly, like Mother's, both deepest black, a sign of beauty. When it was time to eat, Father handed down my bowl. It was emptier than usual, more fish skin than meaty flakes, and the sea plants were dried. I frowned, but then I saw Father's bowl. It sat on the shelf of our family chamber, still empty.
"Why aren't you eating, Father?"
He focused on his boot buckle, fastening it tight.
"I already ate. I'm too full."
"But your bowl is clean."
I had been with him all morning. There had been no other food. Father gave me a smile.
"You're little and still growing, Kalara, so you need food more than an old man like me. I'll be just fine."
I looked down at my meager portion. If we didn't have enough fish to eat, then the other families of the vessel didn't either. We always had the most, because of my father's ability. Mother could make white fire shine from her fingers to light our chamber and cook our fish. Many of the people could do that, along with other abilities. But only Father could move large things with just a thought. Anything that wasn't alive. He could draw the nets around the fish and push the vessel through the water. No food meant a barren sea. It had been several years since that happened, but I still remembered it.
empty bellies, and stifled tears. Last time, 16 bodies had been laid to rest in the deep water. One of them had been my grandfather. As I stared at my bowl of fish skins, I thought of the dream, the one that had seemed so real when I awoke that morning, the one that still sat in my mind, wishing to be spoken. I looked up at Father. If dreams were true, there would be plenty of white meat, although parts of my dream made me afraid. Mother put the last pin into place, securing the little curls at the ends of my plaited hair. There's nothing to fear. Sleep scares aren't real. I wish it were real. In my dream, a biting fish came to Father's boat, and it pushed through all his protective nets. It was the biggest he ever caught. Too big for the gutting deck on the vessel, and it was hungry because of the barren water. Father fought the fish with his long knife, and its cutting fin sliced his hand. But in the end, he killed it, and everyone helped to skin it in the water. Father laughed at my dream, but I didn't mind. His laughs never mocked and always made me feel like I was part of the fun.
"I'll take the long knife with me today if that makes you feel better," he said. "But you know I would never let a biting fish cut me. It wouldn't get through the nets."
But later that day, Father returned with a hand wrapped in damp cloth. He and Mother exchanged sharp whispers in the hall outside our chamber. A closed door kept me out of the conversation, and I fell asleep alone that night. The next morning, everyone in the vessel ate roasted chunks of white fish meat. Father took big bites from his full bowl.
"You must always tell me when you have a special dream, Kalara. That was a very good thing you did."
But another didn't come for a long time. I had ordinary dreams, the kind where I could breathe underwater or where all my teeth fell out. Sometimes I was tempted to make something of them so Father would be impressed again. But that would be lying, and I knew lying was wrong, and everyone would find out in the end. Then, one night, it happened. The real kind of dream, the kind that presses on you until you speak it out. I called out in the dark chamber, "Mother!" She woke and lit her flame, opening their sliding partition. White light flickered from her hand as the vessel rocked in large waves. I crossed the short distance to their bed, holding myself steady against the wall when the biggest swells came. Father scooped me onto the blankets between them.
"What is it, Kalara?"
From his voice, I knew he already suspected. "In my dream, I yelled at you, Father."
"Why?" Mother asked. "What did you yell?"
They waited. "I told you to turn the vessel around. It was dark out, and there was lightning. Before we turned, I had a scared feeling. After we turned, I was happy." When I finished speaking, thunder rumbled, loud enough to be heard deep in the vessel. Father pulled his boots onto his feet, steadying himself against the chamber wall.
"Where are you going?"
Mother asked.
"To turn the vessel."
It was easier for him to move it from the upper deck, where he could see everything. The next day, when the sun came out, the people spotted a dark bloom on the distant sea. Those were the kinds of plants that leached deadly fumes. If Father hadn't turned the vessel, the storm would have carried us through the poison, and the lowest decks would have died in their sleep. More bodies lost to the water. Time passed, and my black curls grew all the way down my back. I spent my days on the ladies' deck with the seamstresses, who called me the lanky child. I needed longer and longer dresses to accommodate my height. The truth was,
I had begun to look less like a child every year, filling out my clothes with the almost curves of early adolescence. But I wouldn't be considered a lady until I was old enough to marry, and that was a ways off still. With their abilities, the seamstresses could make bolts of fine cloth from anything, almost nothing. Scraps of rope and tufts of feathers. I learned to sew a little, though I had no ability for it, and my results were never as good as the others. The ladies liked to ask me about my dreams.
Will my parents choose a husband for me soon?
Will I ever have a child? They wanted to know their own futures. But I didn't know those things. My dreams told me where to fish, or when we could swim without the threat of biters, and those things I saved for Father. Then, one night, I dreamed something I didn't understand.
"Tell them," Father said. "Tell them what you told me."
He had gathered 20 or so of the oldest and the strongest people. The ones with the brightest fires and the longest memories. We stood in the rain on the damp wooden planks of the highest deck. It was a warm shower, but still, my skin prickled. I cleared my throat before speaking. In my dream, I walked on sand. Not the skittering of sand that comes up with the fishing nets. It was piles of sand as far as I could see. Plants grew, but not in the water. Some branched into the air on large stalks. Others covered the sand like hair.
Earth plants.
Delilah's gray eyes grew wide. The elder was the last of a generation. Her parents had been born on land. The people crossed their arms and shifted their weight. Some took deep breaths.
"Go on."
Father caught my gaze.
"Tell the rest."
Everyone was there. I spoke up over the shuffling in the chamber. We lived in rooms built on rocks. Some of the elders grew round and plump from so much food. I grew old, too.
"Do you hear her?"
Father addressed the gathering.
"She grew up on land. Without disease."
"There can be no land without disease." Darlila spoke slowly, as if explaining something complicated. But we all knew the histories. After the wars, all the land was tainted. Darlila's grandparents had all died there, and her parents fled to the waters with the refugees. In those days, there had been many other vessels, larger than ours. Our people disagreed about which directions to travel. We never saw the others again. Now, no one remembered the land. Was it really made of rocks and plants? Mother told me once that land was steady. Even the harshest storm wouldn't cause it to sway. Father stepped forward.
"But what if there's new land, untouched by the old wars? We've traveled far enough."
"Impossible." Darlila shook her head. "Nothing escaped the wars." Our people had tried to walk on faraway lands during the first generation, hoping they would be safe after years of travel. Everyone who went got black sores on their skin. Within 3 days, they died, and they could spread the disease to others through touching. Darlila remembered it.
Father looked to the others. "Just because something has never been seen doesn't mean it's impossible. Kalara dreamed of traveling eastward."
The room went still. We avoided eastern currents. Storms raged there. Father cut through the silence.
"She's never been wrong. Kalara, tell them about the children."
I hid my hands in the folds of my skirt. There were more children in my dream than I've ever seen. As many little ones as adults. Of the 832 people on the vessel, only 59 of us were still considered children. Many of the adults were young, like Mother. Most were old. Babies never came easy. It took years of marriage. But with barren seas and thin bodies, babies didn't come at all.
"We've spent generations trying to survive," Father said. "But what kind of future are we surviving for?"
I had finished my contribution to the conversation, and soon the adults ushered me off the deck into the lower vessel. They stayed up there for a long time. Father and Mother didn't return until evening. 7 days after the meeting, our vessel turned toward the sunrise, toward the currents we never traveled, and toward my dream. Chapter 2.
A man from each household has volunteered as a watcher.
Father offered his arm to Mother, escorting us home for the day.
There will always be at least two of us looking at the horizon, watching for land at all times.
Even during a storm? I descended the stairs behind them. When the vessel doors are sealed?
Perhaps there won't be any storms.
But the winds came, and the watchers sealed themselves inside with everyone else. We took shelter in our chamber, and my stomach churned with the current. Father could hold the vessel still in the waves for a while, but then his mind would tire, and everything swayed again. Mother told stories and kept her fire burning through the night and day. After 10 days, it was the longest storm I had ever been in. At 13 days, I thought it would never pass, and all our bodies would go into the deep water. I never shared my thoughts out loud. Mother's puffy eyes already held fear. Then, one morning, the lurching and howling stopped, and the people returned to the windswept decks. That's when the news washed over the vessel like a wave. Land. They had seen it on the eastern side. Father led us to a low deck to the east, the closest to our chambers. He held me up over the curling metal rail on the balcony. Sea mist dampened my face.
"Is it the land you saw?"
he asked. I squinted against the white sun. How can I compare it? I've never seen any other land. Father was silent for a long time before he spoke.
"Neither have I."
I sat with my parents on my bed in our little chamber. Today, the room seemed even smaller than usual. Had the wooden beams of the walls always been so close together?
"I will only be gone for 3 days."
Mother's dark eyes glistened with unshed tears, but she blinked them away and forced a smile. "I want to come with you." I squeezed her hand as tight as I could.
"Your mother was chosen for a reason," Father said. "Her fire is strong, and she'll be safe by herself."
I was still a child, but I wasn't little anymore, and I wasn't stupid. I knew things, even if Mother and Father never told them to me. Our family had brought the vessel here. It was our responsibility to test the land. Father couldn't be spared. If something happened to him, who would move us? During the first generation on the vessel, there had been two others with his ability. Now, he was the only one. Mother was the obvious choice, and she believed in my dreams enough to go. I wanted to believe, too. I always had. But this time, the consequences scared me. I was safe on the land in my dream. I saw myself. My voice cracked. "Send me instead." Mother brushed a loose curl from my brow.
My brave girl. When you're grown, you'll have to make the hard decisions. For now, that burden belongs to us. Let us carry it for you.
3 days, 3 nights. That's how long she would have to stay on the land, all alone. According to our histories, the sickness would come within moments of touching Earth. But all the elders agreed she should stay longer, to be sure. I stood in the morning sun, watching her journey to the shore. The others gave us privacy, our own balcony with a sofa and food and water, so we could stay the whole 3 days. She took the littlest boat, the one that would hurt our fleet the least if it were lost. Was Mother supposed to be like that? Expendable? To me, she was the biggest boat. Tears slipped down my cheeks as her form grew smaller, bobbing away in the water. Father held my hand tight, and I squeezed back. He was guiding her boat with his mind. Soon, she would be out of his range, and she would have to paddle the rest of the way. He had moved the vessel into the shallowest water he dared, anchoring it as close to the land as possible. Here, the sea lay smooth and clear. The shore stretched out in front of us, white and clean. Beyond the initial line of sand, glittering plants covered the earth, their long stalks rich with silver fronds. Mother's boat stopped sharp when it touched land. At this distance, we could see her movements, but not the expression on her face. For a while, she seemed to stare up at the plants, her body frozen still. Then she moved, and my heart pounded in my chest. One of Mother's feet met the shore, then the other. I didn't breathe. She kept moving, pulled her little boat out of the water, turned in a slow circle, eyeing every detail around her. Finally, she faced the vessel and threw a hand in the air, letting her white flame blaze, a signal to us. I heard voices roar from decks I couldn't see. Everyone was watching. Father flamed at Mother in return, a dim light flickering over his fingers. He had little fire. I had none, but I raised my hand anyway. My heart was alight. For now. Moments passed. Her flame disappeared as expected. We had agreed she would flash 3 times if she felt ill. At night, she would keep a small fire for us to see her by. Father would be the only one on the vessel to light in return, so she would know it was him, so they could be with each other. The sun moved higher in the sky. Eventually, my heart slowed and I allowed myself to blink. Until Mother got braver. She bent down and ran a hand through the sand. Father's hand tensed in mine. Mother removed her slippers and raised her skirt enough to show bare feet. No barrier lay between her and the earth now. I bit down hard enough for pain to run through my jaw. Time passed. Mother didn't flash 3 times. At sunset, she sat on the ground. Father and I had been standing the whole time, too, our bodies rigid, our eyes alert. Father watched the shore but spoke to me.
If she's relaxed enough to sit, we should too.
In a slow, deliberate motion, he lowered himself onto the sofa. It took me a while, but I eventually followed. Daylight slipped away and Mother became a bright flame across the water. Father's hand glowed also, though dimmer. I hoped it was enough for Mother to see. The night air chilled and I leaned into Father for warmth.
You should sleep, he said. I'll watch.
But I couldn't sleep. I couldn't look at anything except the fire on the land. What if she flashed when I looked away? The moon rose. The sky darkened into deepest black. With each sign of passing time, my heart eased by a fraction. If nothing had happened yet, maybe it wouldn't happen at all. When it was almost morning, I closed my eyes for longer than a blink. My lids fell, then opened. They fell again and stayed closed. Until Father's breath caught in his throat. I sat up. Below us, Mother's fire blazed to its full capacity, a blinding circle of white in the early dark. Was it flashing? No. The stars still shone, so I hadn't slept for long. We scrambled to our feet and leaned against the rail, squinting into the light. What does it mean? My voice shook. We hadn't planned for this signal, a long brightening. Father didn't answer me. He stared across the water, his eyes wide. In the center of the light, Mother's form stood clear and dark, both hands flaming. She held them in front of her, toward the land plants, her feet in a wide stance. What was she guarding against? I strained my ears, but all I heard was the usual creaking of the vessel. She was too far away. Several shadows moved beyond Mother, and my heart stopped beating. There were others down there. Had someone else gone ashore? The Watchers? But when the figures came close to the light, they were unlike any person from the vessel. They stood too tall, too long and thin. The closest one was more than twice Mother's height. Others were even bigger. Father threw an arm in front of me, as if I were the one surrounded. His fire brightened, and his breath quickened. "Go get her!" My voice came out shrill. Father shook his head, his eyes locked on Mother.
"I won't leave you. She made me promise."
One of the figures reached a gangly arm toward Mother, and a sob tore through me. We hadn't planned for this.
"Go anyway," I pleaded.
"She may be sick and not realize it. It would spread. I promised."
They didn't want to leave me without parents. But how can Father watch and do nothing? Mother thrust her fire upward, and the tall figure backed away. They surrounded her now. I tried to count, but my racing mind lost track. There were more than 10. I knew that. Mother brandished her fire in fierce gestures. The tall people flinched, but didn't leave. Then a smaller one edged into the light, his slender frame moving cautiously. He knelt until his face came level with Mother's. I could see from the tilt of her head that she spoke to him. Mother's flame went dark. Voices rose from the vessel. Father roared above them all, "Raise your fires!" The vessel heard. Light poured from decks above and decks below, illuminating the water around the vessel. I had never seen so much light from our people. But it wasn't enough to reach the dark land. A cold ache built in my stomach, then spread to my whole body. I trembled. Father tried to hold my hand again, but I wouldn't take his. I clung to the rail instead. I wouldn't be his reason not to help. The anchor holding him back. Plans raced through my mind. If Father got close enough in his boat, he could move things with his ability. Build a fortress around Mother, throw stones at the tall people. But he wouldn't have enough light. Someone else would have to go. Mother's flame lit, and all other thoughts ceased. The white fire came slow at first, then brightened. She stood with one hand high, facing the vessel. Her other hand rested on the stranger's shoulder. A gentle touch. The stranger was kneeling beside her, looking back at us, hands outstretched and empty. "What is he doing?" I asked Father.
"Showing us he means no harm."
My shaking stopped, but my body stayed tense.
"Who are they?"
But I already knew Father wouldn't have an answer. Mother left the shore at sunrise, when the black of night lightened to gray. The tall people gathered on the sand and watched her leave. I wished I could see the details of their faces from where I stood, read their emotions. Did they even have faces like ours? Their bodies were built almost like regular people, but the proportions were wrong. Something that big couldn't be like us. It took a long time before Mother was allowed to climb back into the vessel. She waited there with her boat tied to the lower deck, while all the elders met with Father. Down in the lapping water, she was still too far from my balcony for us to communicate. But our eyes met and held. In the end, the elders must have decided she didn't carry a disease. If the land was poisoned, the giants wouldn't be able to live there. I waited in our chambers while Father ushered her through the vessel. The hall bustled with people's voices as my parents approached. Apparently, the time for privacy was over. Mother hadn't died.
"What did they say?" people asked. "What were they like? What are they?"
Mother and Father burst into our room, then pushed the door shut behind them.
"Kalara!"
Mother opened her arms to me. I rushed to her and laid my head against her shoulder. My tears dampened her collar, and her hands drew soothing circles on my back. I never wanted to let go of her again.
"I'm sorry we didn't come to you," I said. "We should have."
Mother stroked my hair.
"I'm glad you didn't. I wanted you safe."
But I didn't want to be safe. Not while someone else was in danger and I could help. I took a step back and looked at my mother. In that moment, I made a vow in my heart. I would never sit back on a balcony like that again, no matter what anyone said. In the future, I would do something. Father continued a conversation he and Mother must have begun in the hall.
"But why did you put out your fire?"
"They don't speak like us," she said. "They babbled at me and kept coming close, agitated. I thought I would have to burn them. But then a smaller one could talk. I think he's younger than the rest."
Her tone was light, almost excited. So different than I had felt as I watched her face the strangers. She went on, speaking fast.
"He said they were trying to help me. They thought I was burning myself because they had never seen a fire ability before. They've never seen any people like us. I'm the size of a child to them."
"So you showed them you could control the fire by putting it out," Father said.
Mother nodded.
"And I warned him I could burn them if they tried to hurt me. When I spoke to the small one, he could translate my words back to the others. It's his ability."
An ability no one else had. Like Father. Like me. How strange that she called him the small one. He was probably as tall as Father.
"Then the vessel flamed, so I knew I had scared you all. I asked him if I could touch him, to show everyone I was safe. They agreed. After that, we talked."
"What else did they say?"
Father asked.
"Before you came back?"
"They asked me about life on the water. They don't even know how to swim. Can you imagine that? And they told me about the land. Alistair."
She used my father's full name.
They grow more plants than you can imagine. It's what they eat. They said they have whole fields of food, always ready.
From her pocket, Mother pulled out something round and white.
I tasted it. It's safe, I think. But let's wait a while before anyone else tries, to make sure I don't get sick.
Can I hold it? I asked.
Careful.
She placed it in my hand with a cloth underneath, so it wouldn't touch my skin. An enticing scent wafted from the food. Once, years ago, we had found a sea plant with blossoms. This smelled almost like that. Sweet. But even better. Father held it next, and he breathed deeply through his nose. Mother caught his eye.
The land people seem... I don't know how to say it, but I'm not afraid of them. Alistair, they want us to see the land.
Father looked at me with pride, the way he always looked when my dreams became real.
Well then, he said, I think we'd better go.
Chapter 3. I had always known we weren't made for the water. The people on the vessel had no gills. We had no fins, no wings either. We were creatures living in between, without a home. Until we set foot on the sand.
Take off your shoes, Mother told me before we left the boat. Trust me, it's better that way, and you won't ruin your fine boots.
The earth squished between my toes, so unlike the planks I was used to walking on. It was liquid and solid at the same time. I stood ankle-deep in water and stared at my feet. The vessel floated on water, so I always knew what was beneath me there. But what lay under the ground I stood on now? More sand, more ground. Rocks and gravel and dirt, on and on forever. I couldn't imagine it. But I wanted to be here. This was what Mother had risked herself for, and everything would happen just like my dream, with elders growing fat and healthy. The only thing I hadn't dreamed about was the giants. At first, I thought Mother was fascinated by them. But then I realized she was more interested in the land and the plants. I couldn't stop picturing the young giant who had stepped forward to intervene for her. He did what I should have done. Mother said his name was Paik, a word that sounded too small for his size. The breeze smelled like plants, and all the earth leaves rustled when it blew, a strange sound. I walked onto the shore and stumbled, swaying side to side.
You said land doesn't move.
Mother smiled.
It's not moving. You are. You're used to the movement of water. But you'll get used to land in a few hours. I did.
My stomach lurched, and I hoped she was right. She was. Before a year passed, most families had built houses on the northern shore. They used stone set and carved on more stone. Our home was the best and the largest. Father brought giant rocks from far away, the perfect shapes and slants to form our walls. When storms came, our rooms no longer tossed in the wind. Compared to the deep sea, these shores were barren of fish. No biters came, and only the smallest swimmers lived in the shallows, each fish barely a mouthful. But the giant's food tasted even better than it smelled.
What kind of fruit is this?
I sat at our table and took an enormous bite, sweet juice bursting in my mouth. Mother grinned.
I can't keep track of all the names.
That kind grows on a tree, Father said. The other one grows under the ground.
He would know. When the giant people heard our story, they made a refuge treaty with the elders. In exchange for food, our people would help them harvest. Father was their favorite. He could move anything with little effort. And the trees don't run out of fruit? I had asked this question too many times to count, just to enjoy the answer. They never run out. Endless food. I would never get over it. They even had enough to dry and save for the future, which we would need. According to Father, the giant people had spoken of a bizarre custom. Sometimes they would sleep for years at a time when the air grew coldest, which only happened once in a long while. Father called it hibernating. Some fish did it too. It would be a long time before the tall people slept. Years and years. Still, our people had begun preparing, storing grains away. In the cold times, without the giants' help, we would be left to survive alone on land. Father finished his breakfast.
I'm going to the fields this morning.
Can't I come see? I asked. You keep saying someday.
Someday, but not today.
It was the answer I had expected. Mother and I began sorting and cutting our basket of fruit. She would lay the pieces in the sun to dry. We're still building trust with the giants, she said, and communication isn't easy. It's best left to the elders. The elders were learning giant words, and Father, too. But for now, there was only one giant who could speak with them easily. The young boy with an ability. He could speak to anyone. I hadn't ever seen him, except for that night on the shore in Mother's firelight. But I knew his name, and I had grown more and more curious about him. Have you spoken with Paik lately? I asked Father. He exchanged a look with Mother.
We're all cautious with our children, Kalara. The giants are our friends, but not our people. I don't blame them for keeping him close to home.
Like Father kept me close to home. Of the 59 children on the vessel, I was the only one my age. Mother had birthed me during barren years. A miracle. Later, more children came to the vessel. But that meant I was different than the younger ones. Not technically an adult yet, and not little. Paik was the same. Not grown. Not a child. What would it be like to have a friend my age? After a while on the land, the dream began. The same one every night. The one Father wouldn't listen to. At first, he wanted to hear. The dream starts a long time in the future, I said. I don't recognize any of our people. I think they haven't been born yet. They're thin and they work in the sun all day. Too much work. The giants have new elders and they don't like us anymore. They're the ones making us work. A shadow fell over Father's face.
How does the dream end?
I didn't want to say this part, but I knew I had to. A giant hits one of our children. The child bleeds a lot. And then we use our fire on the giants. We burn them. I swallowed. The giants are gone, and all the plants die on the land. Everything is barren. Our people go back into the vessel, but it's old now. It sat anchored for a long time, and no one has been taking care of it. It sinks in the deep sea. The giants die in fire. We die in water. It was late, and Mother had already gone to sleep. Father sat on his chair and let out a long breath, rubbing his temples. After a moment, he looked up and spoke.
If you don't recognize anyone, they would have to be our great-grandchildren at least. Do you think that's right?
Yes. I stood and paced in our large room. Our future family. Father's face showed no emotion.
You've never had a dream that far in the future before. I need time to think about this. Let's try to sleep, Kalara.
Before I went back to my bed, I stopped Father. Is it true about the plants?
What do you mean?
In my dream, the crops died with the giants. Right now, we don't have our own fields. Are the giants the only ones who can grow fruit?
We have plenty of food, Father said. For that, we should be grateful.
But that meant I was right. This land didn't belong to us. At first, I told Father every time I had the dream. It came almost every night. Then, after a while, I started keeping it to myself. I already knew what Father would say. And he never looked me in the eyes when he said it.
What can we do? It isn't our future. It's someone else's.
But it was our family's future. Our grandchildren's children. Father didn't want to think about it. I couldn't stop thinking about it. He didn't have the dream pressing on his mind night after night. The deaths weren't real to him, a vivid picture every time he slept. Father's ability was present and tangible, unlike my future visions. He moved things and took action. What action could he take for something so far away? But all the previous dreams had come for a reason. Why would this one be different? Early one morning, I awoke from the dream. The smell of fire still burned my nose. Real, but not real. I fastened the tiny buttons on my dress and headed for the front door. I didn't eat. I didn't comb and pin my curls into a pattern of braids the way I ought to for a girl my age. Mother saw me from her chair. Was it? I nodded. She looked the other way, her silent permission to leave the house. In the vessel, I would never have gotten away with wild hair and bare feet. Mother used to make sure we did things properly. But now, they let me wander when I needed to clear my mind. I walked past our house toward the trees. Looking back, I mapped the distance, memorizing the direction. My stomach fluttered the way it always did in open spaces. Land felt right, solid, but I had lived my whole life in limited rooms and halls and decks. You couldn't get lost on the vessel. You couldn't be free either. Each tree had its own shape. I had learned to find my way by them, but it took a kind of observation I'd never needed in confined spaces. These were land skills. First came the tree with the broken limb. Then the twin trees with white leaves. When I came to the black tree, the one that stood tallest, I could no longer see any houses. That's where I usually stopped. That's where I let my tears fall for children who hadn't been born yet. Tears I didn't want my parents to see. Crying couldn't change the future, but it helped the dream fade from my mind. I sat on the ground, dark and damp. Forest dirt smelled richer than sand, and it clumped onto my bare ankles. I brushed it away. Land was filthier than any of us had imagined. A rustling sound came from the forest, and I looked for a breeze in the tree branches, but the air was still. I stood, a chill running over my skin. Animals lived on land, other creatures without gills, but I reminded myself that the biting ones lived far away in the mountains. The giants had told my father. Perhaps I would see a bird today. The glittering kind Father saw in the far-off fields. I turned, scanning the thick foliage. To my left, something moved in the morning shadows, but it was something too large to be a bird. It stood as tall and thin as branches, shaped like a person. a giant. The first I had seen up close. I froze, staring. Large white eyes peered down at me from a distance, then blinked twice. He was too small to be fully grown, his cheeks too soft. Dots speckled his light complexion, especially on his nose. I had never seen speckles on our people. I looked for a long time, silent. He looked back. Neither of us moved, and the moment seemed to stretch on, each breath full of a new observation. We each had the same number of fingers, though his were long and spindly with dirt under the short nails. We both had bare feet. Mine would be unacceptable among my people. I should have been ashamed. Was he? His expression was impassible as he studied me. White, silky hair fell to the boy's shoulders, tucked behind enormous ears. His nose arched high and came to a point. When he blinked, long lashes touched his cheeks. I had imagined meeting a giant in real life, especially a giant child. But I hadn't expected the wave of sorrow that came with it, as my dream rose to the surface of my mind. I knew I shouldn't care. I would never meet the people from my dream. But in a way, I already had. In my mind and my heart, they were there. This boy was a beautiful creature, and in time, there would be no more like him. Emotion made my throat ache. The boy's face changed too. Lines creased his brow and the corners of his mouth turned down. Could he see my grief? I pushed back the memories of burning giants and wiped my damp face, forcing a smile. This was my first impression, and I wouldn't waste it. Only one giant would be able to speak with me, and I wouldn't recognize him up close after only seeing his outline from a distance on the night he spoke to my mother. There were hundreds of boys his age, and probably his size. What were the chances this would be Paik? But any giant might learn my name, and that seemed a good place to start. I pointed to myself. Kalara. The boy said nothing in return. I thumped my hand against my chest. Kalara. Then I pointed at him, speaking slowly as if that would help. Who are you? I tapped myself. Kalara. I pointed again. You? Nothing. He didn't get it. I had finally met a giant, and he was the stupidest boy of them all. I took a step back and looked up at him. This isn't how it was supposed to go. I kept my tone neutral, but said whatever I wanted, since he wouldn't understand a word. You're supposed to be a wise land creature and teach me things about plants. We're supposed to be best friends. And you aren't supposed to be stupid. The boy's mouth went tight, like someone trying to hide a smile, a smirk. A giant was smirking at me, and that's when I realized. My cheeks went hot. You are Paik. The smirk spread to a smile.
I am.
His voice came out raspy and deep, but he spoke as clearly as anyone from the vessel. I took another step back. I didn't know. I went on like that and I don't even know what I was saying.
I could repeat it for you if you would like. Or maybe I am too stupid.
The heat spread from my cheeks to my ears. I wouldn't have said that if I knew you could understand. Why didn't you say anything?
I wanted to see what you would do.
I did my best. I crossed my arms. At least one of us was trying to communicate. Paik let out an earthy chuckle, then knelt closer to my height.
I know. You did very well, Kalara. Anyone would have guessed what you meant.
He paused for a breath, then went on, his white brows raised.
Why were you crying before?
I wasn't. He gave me a stare that said he knew I was lying. I always knew someone my age would understand me more than the little ones from the vessel. Which sounded nice, until now. I tilted my chin up and changed the subject. What are you doing away from your family?
You are away from your family also.
I nodded toward the black tree. My family's house is over there. Yours is a half day's walk away.
Should I leave you?
What would Father say if he saw me talking to a giant? I could guess. I moved forward. No, I've never met one of you before, that's all. The smirk came back.
I can tell.
Are there others around? I scanned the trees.
No.
Your family doesn't know you're here? He said nothing. I won't tell anyone. I reassured him in case he needed it. I wasn't a secret leaker, even if Paik annoyed me a little. You can tell me why you're here, and I'll keep it between us. Paik searched my face and seemed to decide something. He sat on the ground, his legs crossed in front of him. Still, he was taller than my standing height.
I wanted to see the water people, he said.
Water people? I didn't know they called us that. But you've seen us already. You're the translator.
Yes, but not where you live. And not the young ones.
I felt myself smile. He was curious, too. What do you think? I turned in a circle and held out my arms so he could see all of me.
You are almost as small as an infant.
I'm not a little one, I defended. I'm as grown as you. I can't help it if my people are small.
You are small on the outside.
His brow creased again.
But not on the inside, I think. You have a big gift. A heavy one to carry.
My heart quickened. I don't know what you mean. But somehow, I did.
Your gift. It is larger than most.
Like my father's ability. Like the dreams I carried inside of me. How did he know? Had Father spoken of me? It's not a gift, I said. It's just something I can do. No one gave it to me.
All gifts are given.
Paik tilted his head to one side.
Let me ask you something. When we first saw your vessel, did we think it appeared from nothing? No. We saw the craft and knew someone with great skill had made it. Gifts are the same. They do not come from nothing. Have you forgotten the one who gives them?
I thought about the idea for a moment. My ability isn't a vessel. It's just a thing that happens sometimes. I've never heard of anyone who gives us abilities, and my people wouldn't forget something if it was important. But we had forgotten the feel of land, even though it had once been our home. How did you know about my ability? I asked. Did my father tell the giants about me?
I did not know you called us giants.
He let out a short laugh.
It is a good name. If you tell me what your gift can do, then I will explain how I discovered it.
So, Father hadn't told him. But it wasn't a secret. All my people knew. I hesitated, then answered. I have dreams that come true, or lead us to things that are true. We found this land because of a dream. Paik sat up straighter.
Really?
Really. He let out a long, deep whistle.
Our people do not have any gifts like that.
I'm the only one for generations. If Paik did all the translations, and he didn't know what my ability was, then none of the other giants knew either. No one had ever told them. Only my people had known. Until now. So how did you know about my gift? I asked.
I felt it. Yours is bigger than any of your elders.
You can feel someone else's ability? Everyone else's?
Yes.
My mouth went dry. None of our people can do that.
I'm the only one. For generations.
Our eyes met. Did his gift weigh on him like my dreams? You have two abilities? I asked. You can speak, and you can feel things.
It's all part of one gift. The most obvious thing I do is speak. I have always translated between the villages, and now I translate for your people. But it is more than that. I can make people understand me because I understand them. Their feelings are plain to me, and their giftings.
I thought of my grief when I first saw him, when the memories flooded me. His face had reflected my sorrow. Had he seen more than just my tears? You see into hearts. My voice came out soft. His eyes lit up.
Yes, though I don't think anyone has ever said it that way before.
The sounds of chisels and hammers rung through the air. Paik and I both startled. The men are starting their work, I said. They build things. Some have an ability, a gift for building.
I wish I could see it. We have no gifts like that.
I looked back toward the twin trees. I should go. The ladies are meeting today, and I'm expected to be there. Paik stood, not bothering to brush the dirt and leaves from his loose trousers.
If I come back here tomorrow, will you have time to tell me more about water people? I never get to ask questions when I translate for the elders.
I'm not supposed to, I began.
I know. Me neither.
I hesitated, then looked up at Paik. It has to be early morning, before the sun comes up, and you have to promise not to tell anyone.
I promise.
What will your parents do if you get caught? Mother and father would probably never let me leave their sight again. Paik looked at his bare toes.
I don't have parents anymore. But the elders wouldn't be happy if they caught me.
Oh. I wanted to say something comforting, but I couldn't think of anything. I'm sorry. He shrugged and grinned, showing large teeth.
I won't get caught.
Me neither. We shared a final look, then parted ways. I followed the trees back to the house. I hope you enjoyed listening to People of Water by Rochelle Nelson, narrated by Corinne Norton. If you want to read more by Rochelle, go to rochellenelsonauthor.com to find more of her books. You can also grab a free ebook copy of today's story while you're there in case you can't wait until next week to hear the ending. I'll have a direct link in the show notes. Have you left a review for Finding Fantasy Reads yet? If you have, thank you so much. That's a huge help in building excitement for the podcast. And if you haven't yet, what are you waiting for? Podcast reviews can be daunting to leave, so I've put simple instructions on the website and I'll link to them in the show notes. Learn how to leave one by practicing with my podcast, and then go leave reviews for the other ones you listen to and love. It does a lot to keep the podcaster motivated to keep producing more episodes for you. Thank you all for listening, and happy reading.